Whoa! Pardon me. Oh, oh, gosh. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Welcome, all you annual pass holders, cast members, past or present, or Disney fanatics, anywhere and everywhere, to this preview episode for a podcast limited series called Two Goofs, the show where two former Disneyland cast members and best friends discuss their time working in costume for the Disneyland character department. We are those two friends. I'm Adam, and with me is the second member of our goof troupe, Jeff.
Ahoy, hoy.
So if you are a regular listener to the movie podcast Jeff and I have been doing for 3 years now called Sequel Quest, we thank you for checking out this special preview episode. And if you're a Disney fan checking us out for the first time, just to let you know, Sequel Quest is a show where we imagine prequels, sequels, and reboots to movie franchises such as The Mighty Ducks, or one-offs like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and even WALL-E. So we invite you to take a listen in our archives while you wait for the official launch of Two Goofs in a few short months. What is the Two Goofs podcast exactly? Well, we can tell you what it's not. This isn't an expose on the dark secrets of Disneyland, or a couple of disgruntled former employees trying to air any dirty laundry. It's really a fond remembrance of a time in our lives that was truly unforgettable. That being said, we will be sharing our recollections of some wild goings on behind the scenes. So again, we hope you'll join us for each new episode when the show officially launches at the beginning of 2019. But, you know, as former cast members, we both have a great respect for those magic memories we were able to create for guests at the park over the years we spent bringing those beloved animated characters to life. So we don't want to ruin the fantasy for anyone. So if you want to keep the magic alive, proceed with caution, right? But if you're a Disney Parks fan who is fascinated by all the behind-the-scenes work that goes into creating those experiences that last a lifetime, and you want to hear personal stories of what it's like to put on a costume and really inhabit those characters at the Magic Kingdom, then you're going to get a kick out of this series. On this preview show, we wanted to give you a little history about our friendship, our experiences with Disney properties and parks growing up, and a few behind-the-mask tales from the character department to get you primed for the fun to come. So we can get to that, but before we do, Jeff, did you have anything you wanted to add about what you're expecting?
I've always been a big Disney fan, and working for Disney just made that grow. And for me, it's less about, taking away some of the magic, and more the behind the scenes can add to the magic. Like, hopefully for most of us that are listening, and I would prefer if it's mostly on the adult side, is that it shouldn't be a shock to you that there's actually a human being inside of the costumed characters. But for the most part, like, the people inside really love what they do, and they really love bringing that magic to life. And if we can bring a little bit of that, then I think we've done our job.
So just to kind of give you a history of who are we then? Who are the people that are going to present this information to you? So Jeff and I, we both grew up in Irvine, California, which is just 15 minutes away from Disneyland. We met in high school doing drama together. And in case you didn't know, the Disneyland character department is filled with former drama kids. It's an epidemic.
Is it though?
You don't think
so? I don't
so?
Know. No. I would say that there are many dramatic people. But I don't know that I would say drama people.
Eventually, we graduated. Neither of us got into the UCLA theater program.
Did you try out?
I did.
Oh, really? I didn't know
I never even told you. It was such a shame.
It was such a shame. What monologue did you do?
I did a terrible monologue from Romeo and Juliet that I got standing ovations in high school, and you do it there, they did not want it. Same thing at a Disney-sponsored high school drama competition. I did that. The note was, there are more levels than just angry.
I did Cry Havoc and Let Slip the Dogs of War. Same thing. There's more levels than just angry.
Perhaps we were better suited for working undercover then, because being over 6 feet, each of us, we both performed as Goofy height characters at Disneyland in Anaheim, as well as California Adventure. We were there for the opening of that park, and we really watched it transform from what it was initially launched as to what it has become now. So we were there from 1999 to 2005 collectively. Jeff was there that whole span. I had two different periods that I was working there, and we'll definitely get into that on a future episode. But Jeff is also 2 years older than me. So just so you understand kind of our connection there. But we happen to share the same birthday. We have similar insecurities and senses of humor. And yeah, insecurities bond you.
Okay. So what are... No, I don't want to ask.
No, we don't need it. This isn't that podcast.
But if you say so, I'll believe you.
But yeah, we've had a lot of different adventures that we've brought each other along. So this is just one more to add to the list. But what I'm curious to hear about is Jeff's time growing up before I knew him, taking in the Walt Disney Company product. Because like he said, he really was a Disney kid. So why was that, Jeff?
Well, being a child of the 80s, because I was born in 1980, I was kind of in the sweet spot for the Disney, the second golden age, whatever, with like Little Mermaid and Aladdin and Lion King and Beauty and the Beast and all that. Like, I was front and center. Like, that was my era. The old, what did they call the VHS boxes that Disney would make that were like the big old fat ones?
Yeah, the clamshells.
The clamshells, yeah. And then, like, the other part was because I grew up kind of just taking it for granted. Living, although I think I would dispute the 15 minutes away. Southern California, 15 minutes is like 5 miles in traffic. So it's more like 20 to 30 minutes. But nonetheless, we live about 15 miles away from Disneyland. But because of that, like, I would go to Disneyland. I was never an annual pass holder, but we would go to Disneyland. Like, usually our school would take an annual trip to Disneyland. Growing up doing theater and stuff like that, I was always in honors choir or whatever. So we would go and do Magic Music Days. So I was at Disneyland between 1 and 3 times a year, every year. So I was very, very familiar with the park by the time that I worked there.
That's crazy to me. I wish I went to your school. Closest I ever got to a theme park was SeaWorld, but we didn't go to Disneyland. And I was in choirs. I did all that. And they were dropping the ball. For me, I was into Disney, again, like you said, it was just everywhere. I had the Disney storybooks and cassette tapes. I ate Disney character-shaped popsicles. I had this awesome battery-operated Disneyland train set that drove around little figurines of like the Three Little Pigs or Mickey, Donald, the Goose. Feel like it was so cool. You would push a button to move them on to the next section. I even had records for like Pirates of the Caribbean and the Haunted Mansion that I spun on an old turntable. So Disney was definitely just there from the beginning. But the other thing that would really made Disneyland seem special and understanding what it inspired it to even be built were the Disney Channel previews that came along every year. Those were a big event for me. But Jeff, you had the Disney Channel, right?
Right.
Which is, now, it's weird because your parents are notoriously frugal, but they splurged on cable.
Well, it's funny, and it's always interesting how there are certain things that certain cultures consider necessities. And so it was kind of that thing. To this day, my family has never viewed cable as optional, as like a luxury. Like, it's always just been one of the expenses. Like, we might not be able to afford to go out to eat, but you just have to pay for cable. That's just kind of an assumption. So
for me, I was definitely a basic cable kid. So for that week, I was just up at 6 a.m. I was watching Mousercise. I was watching Dumbo Circus and Welcome to Pooh Corner, New Mickey Mouse Club. And then Kids Incorporated was the big one for me. So the other thing that the Disney Channel had, which was really special, was they would show the classic Disney cartoons. It usually had like a morning block, you know, and they would show like, you know, a half hour's worth of the classic cartoons. So Jeff, I was wondering, is there one for you that has stood out? Because I used to also rent them, you know, in between the previews. I would just go to the library and rent Disney videotapes like Mickey's Magical World. I have a copy of VHS now to this day. But is there one that stands out for you where you said, oh, this is where I got to know those core characters?
Gosh, there's so many, honestly, because it is that thing that you're right. And I guess I do take it for granted, especially because now it's almost impossible to find those because they don't put them on television anymore. They're not really streaming. Hopefully when the new Disney streaming service comes out, they'll allow you, but maybe not. Their moratorium is pretty intense. But like, and that was even, to be perfectly honest, and we can get into this later or maybe even on a later podcast, that was one of the things as a Disney character that would come in later. Most Disney characters were not familiar with those cartoons because they were so hard to find. So for me, yeah, I did grow up with them, seeing them on the Disney Channel. But the two big ones, I guess, that really are first and foremost is one, I always remember the snowball fight between Donald and Huey, Dewey, and Louie, where they build the giant snow forts and they have cannons that are shooting back at each other and just like, it's spectacular. And then the motorhome one where Goofy's driving in front and they do all of this sort of physical comedy along the world. And then Goofy ends up leaving the car to come back and eat dinner. And so no one's driving the car. And yeah, that one's one of my favorites.
Yeah, those are great. You know, for me, a very big one that I always go back to is one called The Worm Turns. And it's kind of an odd title for a Mickey Mouse. And he actually is in kind of a weird situation. It's Mickey Mouse is a mad scientist. And he's working in a lab. You know, he's got all the beakers and test tubes and stuff. And he creates this serum that he sprays onto weaker creatures, you know, animals and insects. And then they're able to fight off their predators. So that was one for me that I just love. Yeah, that was very cool.
That is a weird one.
And then the other one is it's another Donald Duck with Huey, Dewey, and Louie. And it's called Donald Duck and the Gorilla.
Yep.
That's a great one. Yep. Where like Huey, Dewey, and Louie fake him out with a gorilla costume, but then a real gorilla has escaped and is in the house. And the action of those were just so, it was very, very fun.
There used to be like a set that they would show all the time that was the Halloween set. And there was several of them. There was them when they were the ghost hunters. And that one was always one of those on there because they hear on the radio about the gorilla being loose and it's kind of scary and everything. Yeah.
But we know that beyond that, again, like you were saying, Jeff, our era, we were there for the Disney Renaissance in theaters. And I don't know if you had a favorite there. For me, it was always Aladdin. I got to go see Aladdin at the El Capitan Theater in Los Angeles with a summer daycare group. Like, that was a huge experience for me. Is there one that sticks out for you the most?
Actually, we didn't buy many of the clamshells because, again, financially, like, that's just how we rolled. So I think we only ended up with like one or two of them. Then we'd wait for them to come out on TV and try and record them on the VHS. And so, I mean, Aladdin was definitely the most entertaining one. I've always been a sucker for Little Mermaid. The music in Little Mermaid is the greatest of all. But it's one of those things as a male, especially a teenage boy, you can't say that out loud. Like, no, that can't be your favorite. You gotta have something macho.
You could say Ariel was
like
cute. I always thought she
was cute. No, you can't. No. Dude, a 13-year-old boy, no, nothing is cute. Girls are still gross. Like, no.
Because, like, I actually, you know, again, we're talking about our choirs, but, like, we sang Under the Sea, part of a big choir concert, you know. Like, even Beauty and the Beast, for Halloween one year, me and a friend of mine, she was Belle, I was Beast, and then we learned all the choreography just by watching their big dance in the ballroom over and over again, and then we performed at a talent show together as Beauty and the Beast, you know. So they gave you so much to work with. But also after school, the Disney afternoon was like the place to be. You had to rush home. You were going to see DuckTales. You're going to see Darkwing Duck, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, Tailspin.
Oh, Tailspin was the best. Goof Troop. Don't forget Goof Troop. That was a late edition.
Exactly. That was the one, like, when they started getting into Goof Troop and Marsupialami and, like, all these other ones.
Marsupialami.
And then, but what was the other one? Bonkers, the cat who was a Toontown cop.
Yeah, I remember that. Well, and even Darkwing Duck was a late addition. I don't think it was an original.
No.
I think it was just Gummy Bears, Tailspin, and Rescue Rangers.
Right, DuckTales. DuckTales was the one that like was the flagship.
Oh, yeah,
like,
you're right.
It had started earlier, and then they ported it over to Disney Afternoon, and that was like the big deal, you know, like that you could see DuckTales right after school. Still a huge deal. They just rebooted it recently. And people have been searching for that for years. I'm lucky enough to have a couple like DuckTales VHSs and Darkwing Duck and all this stuff. Like that, because again, like that's almost the only way you can get these things anymore, you know, just the little bits and pieces. So like you said, hopefully we get a streaming situation. But this is my question then for you, Jeff. When you talked about going to the park three times a year sometimes, I made it every couple of years. I would go like when family came into town or something. My dad was the vice president of a company that owned the Anaheim Hilton, which was just down the street. So family would come and stay at the hotel and go to the park. And so I would come along. And I only asked to go probably twice in my life, like for me. One was during the Disney Afternoon promotion in the early 90s. They had Disney Afternoon Live, and we'll get to that in a bit. Also in high school, when two older girls invited me along. you remember Belinda, of course. Sure. She called me up one day. She's like, "We're going. You want to come?" I was like, "Yes, older girls." And my dad spotted me like $50 to get in for 4 hours that night. And I recorded it all on audio cassette, of course, because this is an old addiction.
That's kind of how he rolled back then.
Yeah. So maybe that will be a bonus episode someday. Maybe I'll put together the clips from that.
Which I should point out, just and it's kind of a side note. I mean, we are kind of talking about the behind the scenes stuff. The most absurd thing, I think, about Adam, like, as a character, like, as a human character, is his dad. No, correct me if I'm wrong here, Adam. Your dad had an employee who was the widow of one of the 33? Is that the story?
Yeah, well, she was an ex-wife.
She was an ex-wife. So now, okay, backstory. There is the most elite club in maybe the entire United States. Is called Club 33, where Club 33, it's up above Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland. And up until Michael Eisner changed the rules, the only people that could get into this club in the entire world were the 33 people that originally founded Disneyland and their families. So Adam, because he had this connection, could literally get into this club virtually whenever he wanted. So when I heard that as a Disney fan, my mind was, not literally, figuratively blown. Because he took advantage of that, I think, two times?
About two times on my own. Like, that was the thing is, yeah, so I would go as a kid for lunch buffets. Like, when my family was in town, my dad would kind of wine and dine them. And I just remember it being a weird place with food I wouldn't eat. So as a kid, I didn't understand how special it was. But then when I was a senior in high school, I took my prom date because I was like, this is going to be awesome. Our location for our dance was in Anaheim. I'm like, let's go to Club 33. Yeah, so we're walking around and we're all formal and everybody's like, congratulations. They thought we had just gotten married, you know? And then, I mean, I'll finish the story because it's pretty fantastic. We went in, we had our dinner, and right as, you know, we're about wrapping up, there had been this birthday party just off to the corner of the dining room, and we thought it was kind of weird. I mean, it is a place, again, for people who have that connection, the VIPs, they can get in with their families. So anyway, this couple come up behind us as they're walking on their way out, and they just kind of put their hands on our shoulders, and they're saying, "Hey, you know, we just want to say you guys look great. Were you going to a dance tonight?" "Oh, yeah." We're like, "Thank you." And then we looked up, and it's Tom Hanks and his wife. And we're like, "What? Hi, Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson? Thank you."
Yep.
And then they just went on their way. And Woody himself wished us a fine night. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that would go on. So, yeah.
And I'd also like to point out that Adam and I also took dates to prom. And he didn't take us to Club 33. We went to a park and we made them dinner. Come
That's
on,
much
man.
More special. Come on.
Wasn't it, though?
But we
no.
have, in costume, in character, we've had a lot of celebrity encounters over the years. So we will have a special episode dedicated to that because we had more than our fair share of run-ins, especially working at Goofy's Kitchen. Famous people have to eat, too. So that was pretty good. But outside of that, Jeff, so while you weren't able to get, you know, into the elite dining areas, what were your favorite experiences at Disneyland? What was your go-to ride, or was there just an area you wanted to be in, a specific land that was your favorite?
I feel like one of the problems that Disneyland has actually had is teenagers. The magic of Disneyland, I think, is the ambiance, is the character, is the feel of the place, which if you're a teenager, you could not care less about. So by the time I was in eighth grade, having been there, like literally what you would do at Disneyland is you would show up, you would go on six rides, you would go on Space Mountain, you would go on Matterhorn, Big Thunder Mountain, Splash Mountain, Star Tours, and you'd do that and you'd be like, well, I'm done. And like literally that was all Disneyland became. So for me, like even as a teenager, Disneyland had a limited appeal. So at that point, of those six, and this is pre Indiana Jones, so Indiana Jones would maybe be the sixth, but Of those, Splash Mountain was always my favorite. And it was kind of one of those where I think as a teenager you'd go on it because it has that big drop at the end. But for me, it was more that, like, I think Splash Mountain, of all of those thrill rides that they have there, Splash Mountain's probably the one that Walt would be the most pleased with, because there's a story, there's characters moving around, there's music, it's a lot of fun. The adventure of the ride actually fits with the storyline, and that's what I loved. Although, again, as a 13-year-old, I'm not going to admit that to my 8th grade friends.
See, that's interesting. See, you focused on, okay, kind of essentially, what are the cool rides? What are the thrill rides at Disneyland? For me, because I'm a very nostalgic person, even as a kid, I was nostalgic for my life as a kid 5 years earlier. So when I was getting to be in junior high and a teenager, I still loved Fantasyland. You know, that's like the little kid area. You know, like, that's what everybody always thinks of it as. But for me, it was about the cartoon characters coming to life in three dimensions. And all of those rides basically had actual sculpted figures of the characters, even if they were not totally animatronic. But actually, my absolute favorite ride was Storybook Land, was the boat tour.
Really?
And just floating along, seeing the tiny houses from Pinocchio and Wind in the Willows, because it helped me blur the lines between reality and fiction, which is my favorite type of fantasy. So I could believe that the animated characters really live there. You know, they're just tiny. You know, they look big on the screen, but they're tiny, and you film them, you know? So that was always like my go-to. But this is the question that I have for you, though, Jeff, is there an attraction you miss and wish would come back? Because Walt Disney's dream was that it would always evolve. And it's, wow. I mean, in a big way now, we know Star Wars Land is coming and all of that. So we're missing out on some pieces of the park that were there from the beginning almost. And it's kind of sad. But so for you, what's that attraction or that area of the park that you miss that you wish you could be there one more time?
Without even skipping a beat, Country Bear Jamboree. Up until they closed the Country Bear Jamboree, when I was working there, as an employee of Disneyland, you would get a number of sign-ins per year so you could get people into the park for free. Not unlimited. There was a limited amount, but you could do that. So I told all of my friends, like, dude, I'll sign you in. But the deal is, you can do absolutely anything you want, and I will follow you anywhere you go. That's wonderful. We got to do Country Bear. That's my one rule. You got to do Country Bear. You can make fun of it all you want, but we got to do Country Bear. Kind of like you're talking about nostalgia, coming there as a kid and my dad singing, "Thank God I'm a Country Bear," the whole rest of the day, because that song just gets stuck in your head, because that show never changed. It was that exact same summer vacation show year round. They stopped switching over to Christmas at some point, and they just rocked that summer vacation one all year long. It was funny. I found a high def recording that somebody had done of the show. It was unofficial. It was somebody had snuck in a video camera, but they did it like really well. And so I actually burned it onto a DVD and I gave it to my dad for Father's Day, which he was a little confused about. He's like, "What is this again?" Like, it clearly didn't have the connection for him that it did for me. But yeah, that was always my
Country Bears. Oh, that's interesting. See, if I connected to this particular ride basically out of fear initially. It was a ride that I didn't want to go on, and eventually my older brother was able to convince me that it would be worth it, and that it was. And that is the Submarine Voyage ride. It's still there, technically, but I want it to go back to being the low-tech affair that it was, because when it closed in 1998, I was bummed, and I remember as I started working at the park, there was always this rumor, oh, it's going to become a Little Mermaid ride, which I would have been all for, because the Nemo theme just doesn't do it for me, especially like the projections and all that. Like, I want actual physical creatures in the water, and the original was so murky and creepy, and like, you know, I can really imagine that sea monsters and mermaids were living there and coming to life, and they used to have real mermaids out in the lagoon, you know, that would wave to you.
But that's way
I know, not in our time. I saw that in a book. But my saddest day was when Jeff and I were working there, and he'll remember this well. We were walking backstage behind Toontown one day, and we just saw on this rack was this bald, sunburnt body of one of the mermaids from the submarine voyage. And my heart just dropped. I was just like, this is not coming back. They just don't care. It's the end of an era.
So one is just kind of like a behind the scenes trivia sort of a thing. When they launched the fireworks, they launched them backstage, obviously, so it doesn't hit anybody who's, you know, out there in the park. And so that's the reason that a lot of the like broken animatronics end up back there. And a lot of them end up getting scorched by those fireworks. Yeah. So because, yeah, they looked like it looked like a post-apocalyptic film back there. And that's mainly the reason why.
Yeah, if you've ever seen like the mythical like Fiji mermaid skeleton that would go in like carnivals and stuff, that's what it looked like. And it was gross. But speaking of gross, no, I'm just kidding. Is there also for you, because Disneyland, it could be about the rides. It could be about the characters. It could be about the atmosphere. But for a lot of people, it's about the food. There's like a treat there. There's something you go hoping to find or at least to smell or to see. So is there a go-to for you when you get to the park? You're like, look, it's not a trip unless I've stopped here and got this snack.
No, again, with my family, we did not pay for food there. The closest thing that I will say, which I would expect will probably leak out in this podcast, is I'm a big history buff and kind of a trivia guy. And the best place to stand if you're going to watch the parade is you got to stand on Main Street, because right in front of the bakery, there are these two vents where they pump out the smell of the cooking bakery food. Even in the times when there's not food cooking, they actually pump out the smell of cinnamon and chocolate and vanilla. So it smells like it's constantly being baked food there.
Yeah, it's that area like just right next to the Carnation Cafe, right? It's like right in
right,
that area.
Right, the Penny Arcade, yeah. And yeah, right around.
So yeah, well, that's interesting. Yeah, see, for me, I don't stop on Main Street very often. I love it, but I get myself to New Orleans Square, and I got to get a mint julep. I got a mint julep bar.
As long as it's from Disneyland.
Yeah, exactly. I'll hit it two or three times, the virgin mint julep I had to call. Actually, exactly. Speaking of Club 33, so one of the other times I went there was I took my wife there when we were dating, and it's not at all something that would impress her. She hates anything fancy. Gourmet food is not her thing, but she was up for it. So she went. So I asked for a mint julep. And they brought me a real mint julep because I forgot, I'm in a club where they actually serve alcohol. And so I clarified with the waitress. I was like, I'm really sorry. I meant from the mint julep bar that's just downstairs. She's like, we don't serve that here. I was like, okay. But Disney customer service is second to none. She went down and got a pitcher of mint julep from the mint julep bar and brought it up to me. And I was just like so happy for that night. It was so special, So there you go. Hospitality, baby. So Jeff, this is my other question. Do you think as someone who visited the park, is there a special memory for you that's maybe out of the ordinary for most people? You think it was kind of a one-time affair or something you saw that most people would not see?
Kind of, for me, one of the most kind of fascinating things that happened was shortly after Hunchback of Notre Dame came out, the movie, they assembled a spectacular set over by what's now, I think, going to be Star Wars Land. That was the Festival of Fools or whatever. And it was this three-story, 360-degree thing. And they did the Hunchback of Notre Dame stunt and musical show. And I remember I saw that show one time, and it was phenomenal. It was Quasimodo is swinging across the audience, going side to side and up and down, all that sort of stuff like that. There were fight scenes, there was music, they were singing, there was just, not only was the show amazing, they kept the show going for quite some time, but the set was so amazing that they kept that set there for, I think, like maybe 10 to 15 years after that show closed. because they were just like, the set is so spectacular, we don't want to tear it down. And not only that, we don't really have anything else to put here. So they just, I remember for a lot of the years that I worked there, this abandoned set was still there and it was spectacular looking. So my guess is that a lot of people that visited the park in those years would just see this abandoned set and just kind of wonder about that. And I remember having like breaks. There was a break room just past. It was the old actually cast break room.
Right, that's what I was going to say. That I remember
show.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember it was a horrible break room, actually, of all the break rooms. Other than the fact that there was only, I think there was only two people in there, which was even creepier. But nonetheless, yeah, so we got to see it all the time. And so that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it actually, you know, the singing and dancing show element is actually where one of my memories comes into. Because my older brother, he's 17 years older than me. He married into a family of professional clog dancers. Yes, that's a thing. They were called the Elm Street Cloggers, and they performed at theme parks like Knott's Berry Farm and Disneyland. So I got to see my brother dance at the pavilion that's out in front of Sleeping Beauty's castle. So I got to see him do his clog routines and do an Elvis impersonator routine, which was just kind of surreal. My brother as Elvis at Disneyland. It was just a weird situation, but I'll just never forget that. But on the other end of things is, and this is something to tease you with that I hope we can bring out. We can keep it from being too incriminating. I might have to do a voice changer or something. But I had a friend, Jeff knows him as well, who was a highly skilled trespasser. That was his hobby, essentially.
Oh.
His group of friends. Yes, now it's coming to you, right? And he managed to sleep over on Disneyland Park property on several occasions.
No,
you don't believe it.
No,
I know you don't.
I don't see, that's the other part too, is this, I was also Adam would believe virtually everything this man said.
Well,
so
here's the thing though, he had evidence, because what he had done is snuck onto rides while they were under renovation, and even sometimes in operation, he knew where the blind spots were with the cameras. He would test them. So he would go in, and he would, like, we'd be on Pirates of the Caribbean, and literally I was with him once, he jumped off right where the skeleton is driving the boat, you know, and he just jumped out and ran behind it. You know, the ride didn't stop, nothing had happened. He had been testing it for years, and he jumped out and disappeared at the end, just before the ramp, when the guys are shaking the bones for the dog to give him the key. He was there with the three prisoners in the jail cell. And I wish I had a camera. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. So that's why I lend so much credence to his stories. And he also had, from Pirates of the Caribbean, he had the head of the mayor who was getting dunked into the actual well in town, and he had a parrot, and he had one of the pirate heads. So yes, he was a criminal and a thief, and he did get caught eventually and was on the lists of Disneyland. So it's all there. But I did interview him just for my own personal entertainment on an audio cassette in the early 2000s. I still have the tape. So if he will allow me to release that, that's something I would love to share with everybody, because the stories are amazing.
Which is why we do question Adam's choice of friends from time to time.
Oh, I love the odd. Hey, Jeff, what does that say about you?
Yeah, I know. I realize
all
that.
All right.
Now.
Well, let's, you know, as we're wrapping up here, you came to get the inside scoop on what it's like to be a costume character. So the question I have for you, Jeff, is, was there ever an encounter as a child growing up with a costume character? Was that in any way a part of an inspiration for why you wanted to work at Disneyland? Can you remember a specific experience?
No. Like, honestly, it's the craziest thing. Like, the dream is for kids to feel like their cartoon characters have come to life. I never once felt that way. Like, I did not come to Disneyland thinking that Mickey Mouse lived there. I never, like, that was not my experience. The closest thing that I had, which sadly, and we can talk about this maybe on another show or something like that, is the Disney Afternoon not only was a big deal like we were talking about for our childhood, but actually radically changed what it meant to be a character at Disneyland. And I was a part of that. I mean, I wasn't a character. I was too young at that time. But I definitely participated in the whole thing where you get a map and you run around and you get stamps and you do all that sort of stuff like that. I remember doing that. That was kind of the closest connection that I had to a character.
See, that's so interesting because that is definitely mine too. That was like a pivotal experience. I just remember them advertising it, you know, the Disney Afternoon Live, come on out, meet your favorite characters on Disney Afternoon Avenue or whatever, you know, and you would know where to go and you could say, yes, right. Darkwing Duck's going to be there. And that's who I was there to see. I was like, a superhero Disney cartoon character based on the Shadow, who I love? All right. And so I remember going there and I had made my own autograph book. And I am the opposite of Jeff in that I bought into it. Like, I was 9 years old. I still wanted to believe and didn't see a person beyond the mask. I was saying, this is really Darkwing Duck and I'm meeting him. And especially Launchpad was there with him. And I was like, Launchpad, he's a crossover from DuckTales and he's on Darkwing Duck now. And and Jeff will tell you also that really didn't even go away in my teenage years. We went to the short-lived Marvel Mania restaurant at Universal Studios and I was too bashful to ask Spider-Man for his autograph. So our friends had to go back and get it for me as we were leaving. And so I buy into it as much as I can. But anyway, but meeting Darkwing Duck was a huge moment for me. I still have the autograph book that I made, Belle's autograph. It has a lot of different characters in it. But going back to Launchpad, on the episode when we get into our auditions, you're going to hear how that fateful meeting with Mr. McQuack really came full circle for me. And it was a really kind of emotional, special moment for me as I started working at the park. So one more thing to look forward to. So, Jeff, if it wasn't the idea of, yes, I want to be a costume character for sure, or I always felt it in my heart that it's where I wanted to be, what was it that made you want to work at Disneyland?
A friend of ours, Justin, he was the one that wanted to go to the audition. And he said, hey, why don't you come with me? And I said, okay. And that's about it. Other than the fact that as a aspiring actor, my thought was if I went to work for Disney, I could pretty much write my ticket anywhere. And I could just say, hey, I've worked for Disney, man. I'm a pretty big deal. So those were my two rationale.
Funny. And you know, the only person I know of, one person who went on to do anything big, and we'll talk about this eventually on later episodes, some of the different behind the scenes characters in the break rooms that we knew. But I know there was one girl who went on to be a villain on Power Rangers, on some iteration of the Power Rangers. So I remember that happening, but it was like, otherwise everybody was, aspiring actors that very often didn't seem to really have as many opportunities as you would imagine. And even for me, you know, I had actually, by the time I graduated high school, I kind of gave up on being an actor. I was like, I realized that I had been a big fish in a small pond. And then UCLA slapped me down and I'm like, all right, I got nothing. I'll just be an entertaining person in life of my own accord. But so for me, just like Jeff, actually, remember, I'm 2 years younger than Jeff, so he had already graduated. I'm still in high school. And then as soon as I graduated, I'm like, well, I need to get a job. Oh, yeah, Jeff works at Disneyland. I want to hang out with Jeff. So literally, I was just like, if I could get a job there, is there an audition coming up? He's like, yeah, there's one coming up. And once I was committed to doing it, believe me, I was there for the magic, the possibility of portraying a Disney character, you know, and I was very curious to see how the sausage was made, you know, I wanted to understand the inner workings, but it's not something I would have actually sought out for myself. I probably would have ended up working at Blockbuster Video or something like that, you know. It was just that Jeff was there and I was like, I can work with my buddy, fine, you know, I'll be there. So that being said, we did get hired. And Jeff, are there stories when people find out that you were, you know, a member of the zoo crew, they get excited? What do you tell them, or what do people ask you a lot? That are some of your go-to stories?
Usually when people ask you what you do or they ask you something, they don't really care. They're just trying to make conversation. But if you throw out, oh, I worked at Disney, then they're at least, oh, really? And they usually have like one more question they're actually interested in. That's kind of how the conversation would go for me, is that someone would ask, where do you work or whatever? And I would always say, I work either for Disney or at Disneyland. And that would be my first thing. And they would, oh, really? What do you do? And then I would say, I'm in entertainment, would be my second thing. And then if they kept pushing, I don't want to like lie, so I'm going to kind of, and I say like, well, I do multiple things. I dress up in different characters and I do stage stuff and I do this and that and the other, whatever. Which usually it always seemed to be there was someone nearby me that would be like, he's goofy. Like that would, they would just give it away or whatever. Which that's the bummer is that a costumed character is a very unique profession, especially in a lot of other people's eyes. It's kind of like being a clown, where a clown is actually an incredibly difficult thing to do well. But I don't think most people think that. I think if you tell someone your profession is you're a professional clown, they laugh in your face, and not in a good way. And it's kind of that same thing with a character. So if I just say, hey, I'm goofy, it's a weird conversation. So in a really, really long way to answer your original question, my favorite one, it was actually I was on my last legs. I had just gotten another, I actually started my own business. And so I was just about to leave. And this one guy like happened to mention that I worked at Disneyland. And he said, hey, I'm going to bring my 3-year-old daughter to Disneyland for the first time. Do you have any advice? And I was just like, this is the greatest moment of my life. Thank you for finally asking the right question. So I don't know if he did it, but my one time to actually shine, I got to say, like, honestly, the best thing you can do is walk through those gates, put your daughter down and say, lead on, and just follow her all day long. And I guarantee you it will be the greatest experience you've ever had at Disneyland. Whether he did it or not, I don't know. But for me, I wish more people would ask that question.
Yeah, now see, as you guys can tell, and I'm sure you've noticed as we've gone through our conversation here, Jeff and I, we're friends, we're similar in many ways, but Jeff's reverence for Disneyland, for having been a character, for really what it meant and what it can mean to people is enormous. And I am kind of on the other end, where I was there to have a good time, and I really enjoyed it, but I think in a very different way from Jeff. So I'm not going to pussyfoot around some things. So let me mention this. During my training time, as I was just learning to be a costume character, one of the things everybody hears about, like the rumors, like, oh, there's a basketball court in the Matterhorn, or there's underground tunnels all over Disneyland. And I found out, well, one of those things is true.
Oh, they're both true.
Yeah, they're both true. But I haven't experienced the basketball court.
Oh, no.
So one of the awesome things I got to do was Tomorrowland was where I was trained. Not necessarily characters that are based in Tomorrowland, but it was like a training ground they decided to set up. And so I remember being in an underground dressing room and getting dressed and then walking through these just like corridors of pipes that I knew were like right under Space Mountain. And right, you know, I was just like, where am I? Like, this is so crazy. Then getting to come up and meet guests and interact with them and all of that. But just the fact that I had traveled through secret corridors was a big deal. Then a little bit later on in my career, I was there working a night shift, and at the Tomorrowland Terrace, which most people now probably know, that's where they do the big Jedi training school show. Also, you know, traditionally, it was a place where they would have bands perform there. And so they had a band, you know, it wasn't anybody big. It was just kind of, you know, a top 40 band. So they decided for their big finale, they were going to bring a bunch of characters out. So it was like me and three other characters. And we got to come up through this like elevated platform that brought us up in the middle of the song. And then everybody's like, yeah, you know, you just hear the crowd erupt. And so it was like the moment to be like a costume character and a rock star all in one. For 3 minutes of a song and just dance around and have a great time. So those are some of like the cooler things. It's like, yes, there are underground tunnels, in case you were curious. Like, they definitely exist.
Well, as far as I'm aware, there's only one underground tunnel at Disneyland, and it smells like old bread.
When you're in costume, you can't tell.
Oh, I could.
That might have been your mask.
Oh, I know one. One of my favorite ones is that, so one of the hardest things about the job is autograph books. Autograph books are the spawn of the devil. I don't know. It's and what was always heartbreaking for me is that here is Goofy come to life, or here is the Beast, or here is whoever come to life standing right there in front of you, and you shove an autograph book in his face, he scribbles something, and then you walk away. And it's just like, really? So for me, it was always like, I wish I could have that moment, you know, where it's like this child that actually, or adult, I don't really care, like that actually appreciates this character come to life. And so for me, I remember, I mean, I guess in 6 years, it's got to happen once, right? Is that I had one of the, I've had a bunch of them, but one specific moment that I remember, I was at Town Square, which Town Square is kind of that first area that you enter when you come into Disneyland underneath the railroad and stuff like that. And there's the Mr. Lincoln and the flagpole in the middle and stuff like that. I was Goofy that day. And I walk out on stage, as we call it, which is coming out into the park from backstage. And as soon as I walk out there, I see this little kid, maybe 4 or 5 years old, like way on the other side of, like by the fire station. They're over there, and I just hear this, Goofy! And this little girl just starts sprinting as fast as she can, coming straight towards me. And not in like a, oh my gosh, she's going to kill me sort of a way, but in just pure joy. So I do the Kodak moment thing where I get down on one knee and I just stick my arms out, and she just dives right in there to get the biggest hug of all. And I was like, there it is. You know, that's the dream. That's why we do what we do.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Very special. And, you know, again, you as a character, that's your job, right? You're supposed to make that moment mean the most it possibly can. But one of the things that also happens, there are probably a lot of people listening participated in magic music days as kids. You know, my nephew just went recently with his high school orchestra. But it's kind of a big program that Disneyland does, and you get to actually perform at Disneyland. And I remember one time for me, just so you know, there is a special events team at Disneyland that goes out and does the promotional type things. If characters are going to be on the news or characters are going to be in a promotional picture or something, you know, it's a very different group than the day to day. So occasionally you would get pulled out for something special and they say, hey, we need your help. We trust you. Can you do this for us? So in this case, there was a Magic Music Days situation where they had double booked two schools. And I believe a part of the element, too, is I think there was some sort of, like, recording or something that was supposed to be kind of your keepsake from the experience. And so, basically, the scheduling people had messed it up. There was this whole school there, and the kids were, like, getting disappointed. They weren't actually going to get to perform. They weren't going to get a video, and they were going to have to reschedule them for a different day. So I remember one of my leads, you know, our managers essentially came over and said, hey, we need you to do this. You're going to go in and you're going to beg forgiveness from this kids. We're putting it all on Goofy.
Like, wow.
You know, Goofy's going to be the scapegoat. And I was like, I could do this. So basically what they did was they wrapped me in a bunch of cables, right? And like, you know, audio cables and all this other stuff. So then they open the door and I stumble in and I'm like, you know, running, you know, just falling all over the place and whatever. The kids start laughing. They're like, Goofy's here. And then, you know, the lead comes in. He's like, look, guys, here's what happened. You know, Goofy got into the equipment and it just messed up our calendar. And then it's like, I get on my hands and knees and I'm shaking my fists together. I'm begging for their forgiveness, please. And they're like, can you please forgive Goofy? Can you forgive him? They're like, yeah, we love you, Goofy. You know? And I just got all excited, did a little happy dance, you know, high five some kids, you know, like got out of there. But it was just, it was fun to be able to make something better, something that had gone wrong, and Goofy could save the day for a moment.
Right, to have Goofy take the fall for the rest of them messing up. Come on!
Jeff, you got one more in ya.
Sure. One of the things that we would do that was beautiful, really, was the Make-A-Wish program. Is that the Make-A-Wish, you know, for those of you that are aware, is that terminally ill children will get a wish, essentially, where they say, like, hey, more than anything, I want this. And sometimes it's like, I want to meet The Rock, or I want to, like, you know, eat ice cream off the Eiffel Tower, or like whatever. And this organization, that's what they do. So we would get a lot of those. We would get a lot of people that like this child's wish was, I want to see Mickey Mouse. And I had one that the kid's wish was to meet Jafar from Aladdin, which was very peculiar because like Jafar is a villain. And not only that, but Jafar is not a very nice guy. But again, this is Disney, this is Make-A-Wish, and like this is what we're going to do. So again, I was the one that was kind of on call, so they had me do it. And the Jafar costume is this huge, big old thing. And it was really tough for me because it was like, I can't be Goofy. I can't be like, hey, everybody, because that's not how Jafar is. And that wouldn't be this kid's wish. Like, I got to be Jafar. But at the same time, like, Oh my gosh. So it was at the Disneyland Hotel, and they had, you know, I got all in costume, and me and like a lead or a host or something like that went up to this kid's hotel room. He was in there, and I remember coming into the room, and the kid, I don't know what he was ill from, but he had like a lot of his head was shaved, and he kind of had like patchy hair and stuff like that. But I do remember the look on his face when he saw me. And it's crazy to think about, just like, why is Jafar your thing, kid? But it was. And it was very awkward because, again, I'm not going to play with him. I'm not going to do, because that's not what Jafar would do. But I put my arm around him and I kind of like gave him like a hug and we took a picture, and it was just seeing it in his face. That was what he wanted. And yeah, so it was pretty special, again, being able to provide that moment for him.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And also, just from a character perspective, Jafar is not a regular character in the park. So
exactly,
it's fun,
right,
to be able to get into those more unique outfits every once in a while, you know, for a special occasion. And again, we'll talk about some special events down the line in another episode. As we close out on these, I'm going to leave you with one more, because a lot of this has been sweet, and that, again, that's who Jeff is. That's what this is about.
And Adam's going to go in a different route.
Yeah, some of you are here to get a little bit more like, okay, tell me something crazy that happens. So tell me something I'm not seeing. So one of the places that Jeff and I worked together quite a bit, actually, we would both be able to be there. And for those who don't know, you know, you kind of trade off. So you there's going to be two Goofies at a time. We've given it away. But, you know, one goes in, one takes a break. You know, that's how it works. We'll get into more detail on that in the future. But I had come back from a break, and I was just kind of resting. You know, I got a couch back there. I was just sitting. And what happens is there's not only costume characters where you're totally encased, there's face characters who are, generally speaking, the princesses. Occasionally you get Aladdin, you know, you get the Mad Hatter, you know, people like that. But it's generally, it's Alice, it's Snow White, it's, you know, not really Cinderella. She doesn't get out that much. But anyway, so Snow White was the face character that was in on that shift. And so, you know, of course she's out there, she's like, it's so nice to meet you. Oh. You know, she would do her little Snow White voice to every table, and she would walk around and visit people. So then I'm coming back on a break, and I'm just like, oh, and I don't know if I was like stepping outside to make a call or what, just needed some sun, whatever. So I walk out the door, and I just see Snow White is there, and she's just got a cigarette in her mouth. She's just puffing away, and I was hearing her real voice. Like, she was on a phone call. She's just like, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it's like. And I was just like, what? Like, again, I'm somebody who like really believes when somebody's in the costume, even if I work with them, like I get into it. And so to see that, it just like blew my mind. And I was like, if the guests could see this, it would be so crazy. So it's just seeing Snow White smoking was one of those, you know, loss of innocence moments for me, but also just unforgettable. She wasn't in costume, by the way, just because that would be a major faux pas. But either way, it was pretty interesting. And I was just like, so what do you do after? You know, she just like had her banaca, you know, her mouth spray and whatever else, just to get the smell out. And that was it, you know. So,
well, and then along those same lines, Adam mentioned before when we went to the Marvel, I thought it was called the Marvel Diner, but you said it was called the
Marvel Mania.
Marvel Mania.
Yeah.
So Marvel Mania is the for me, the star of the night. I know Adam is a huge big Spider-Man fan, even though I thought the Spider-Man was not the best.
Yeah, he
like
wasn't.
He should have been funnier. Spider-Man's a pretty funny guy, but Captain America,
yes,
stole the show. And the thing is too, is that Captain America, he was a regular at Disneyland as Tarzan. So the exact same guy, you know, all of a sudden he shows up in a loincloth, and it's a very different sort of a, he's still, you know, he's still a humorous Tarzan, but, you know.
And I didn't know that, actually. That's funny. I mean, because we should say, you know, another fun tidbit, you know, you're a costume character at a theme park. There's actually some crossover there, especially at Universal Studios. So we had a lot of friends who worked with us in costume and then would go play superheroes at Universal Studios, which would have been a dream for me. And so they were amazing.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, but I do remember Captain America that night. His greatest joke when we, because, you know, we're up in LA, you know, Universal Studios, Hollywood. And so we told him, oh, yeah, we're from Irvine. He's like, oh, behind the orange curtain.
Is that where that came
yes.
from? I've used that line ever since. I thought that was a thing people said.
No, that's Cap all the way.
I always refer to it as the orange curtain now.
That is
that's hilarious.
So I hope you've had a lot of fun listening to this. Again, this is the show is going to be two friends just kind of reminiscing. Again, we're not going to be talking about so much of our past history before the park. They're going to be very specifically themed episodes. We're going to take you through our journey. Okay, so I'll give you a quick rundown just to give you an idea of where we're going to be at. We're going to talk about the audition process, which so much fun. There's a lot there. I actually auditioned twice. I was there on two separate occasions, so I'll have a lot of interesting insight there. We're going to talk about the training process, which as you're getting into it, you're learning so much, going to Disney University, you know, you're getting the full insight and understanding the history and what you do. We're going to talk about our favorite characters that we love to play and the stories that go with that, and also some of our not so favorite characters, because there are a few of those. We're going to, like I said, get into the California Adventure experience. That was unforgettable when that park launched, and just what was involved in, really? This is a Disney park? To how we stayed there, and then they started making it more so. We talk about the Disney dining experiences, because we didn't just work at Goofy's Kitchen at the Disneyland Hotel. There were a lot of Disney character dining experiences. We'll talk about some of the special events we got to participate in. We're going to tell you about our break room bonding experiences, some of the friendships we made, and what other kind of adventures that took us on. Let you know, like, the fun people that work at Disneyland, and some of just the unique individuals that never to be forgotten. Also, we're going to talk about some of the cast nights, the employee events, because there are a lot of those things that people will never, even, you know, VIP guests are not a part of these employee nights. And some stuff that goes on there that is just one of a kind. Then we talked about it, the celebrity encounters, some of our craziest guests that we had to deal with. Not everybody has respect for costume characters, so we've had a few encounters here and there. Then we'll get into making it a career. Like I said, Jeff was in it a lot longer than I was, and there's that decision. There comes that time. Is it a career? Is it not a career? What is the potential of working at Disneyland, and what opportunities are open to you? And, you know, we'll talk about our decision to leave. What brought that about? What was involved there? What did it mean to our lives? How did things change? And we'll eventually get kind of a wrap up. We're going to talk about, you know, life beyond the berm, as we say. You'll learn what that means as you come back. And some of you Disney fanatics already know. And like I said, there's going to be all sorts of special episodes along the way. We'll throw in a few interviews. We're hoping to get some of our other friends that work there. The ones who currently work there, not available. That's going to be a big no-no. And who knows how quickly we're going to get shut down. But we're going to give it to you as long as we can. Until the mouse comes after us. But no, like I said, we're not here to be provocative or shocking. We're here to tell you just how much fun we had and what the experience really was like. Maybe you'll never get that. Maybe it'll inspire you to try it out for yourself. Who knows? So that is that. And again, if you like what you've heard so far, keep an eye out for the updates. You can follow our Twitter account at @2goofspod. Okay, so at the number 2, Goofs Pod, P-O-D. So we'll give you updates there, especially some little things here and there as we're leading into the launch of our first episode. And the plan is to release that show monthly. So the 2 Goofs podcast monthly all throughout 2019. One show a month, a few bonus episodes here and there. That's going to start in January of 2019. So mark your calendars. If you want to email us, feel free. If you're a former cast member and you want to participate somehow and share some of your stories, that would be awesome too. You can email us at 2goofspodcast@gmail.com. Again, the number 2, goofspodcast, so all the way spelled out, at gmail.com. And just spread the word to your friends, your family, your fellow Disney fanatics. Let people know about this, because I guarantee you there's nothing else out there like this. I was actually really surprised. I'm like, there's no other cast members that have done this? Did we all sign a non-disclosure agreement that I'm forgetting? I think the statute of limitations is in our favor at this point. I don't think anything that we did back then can be held against us, and I don't think they have any say as to what we share now, but who knows? So be there for Two Goofs. We want you to be part of our goof troop. So until next time,